the best-kept secret in racing. Till now. Tell all your friends. And to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back second half on this Wednesday of Derby Week. They call it Champions Day now. And a couple of stakes later on. We do have to, at some point, I don't have, I'm waiting for some input from probably Matt Hegarty, who was working on the story that obviously has emerged. I haven't talked about it yet this morning, but the second of two fatalities from the Safi Joseph barn, and there is plenty of things in motion that are, you know, working to have cause and effect type answers, and they'll, you know, the medical, you know, the medical protocols include necropsies and so forth, but that, you know, that doesn't get you answers overnight and immediately. But after making, as Don Corleone would say, the inquiries, I want certain inquiries made. Made some inquiries this morning, and everyone said answers are being sought. Period. So that'll have to, at least for now, that'll have to suffice on that front. And there is no, I'm going to say there's no change, but in fact, no change is a positive potential development when it comes to the stricken Cedillo in Cleveland. Mauro Cedillo in what seemed like absolute dire condition yesterday. He made it through the night, and we just continue to hope for the best. He's young, physically strong, and it's going to, it seemed yesterday that it was being termed looking for miracle type of a scenario. So at least for now, we're 24 hours further down, and hoping for the best for a young man that, I mean, the incident was, there was no escaping what transpired. So, best, hoping for the best. Tom Law joins us from thisishorseracing.com. Haven't talked to you in close to a month. Because I knew I knew that you were, you know, with the rivers and having thawed, I assumed that you were, you know, back, and the ice fishing season was over, and snowshoeing was over, right, and ice pick climbing,
cross country skiing
was over. So
winter hiking.
What other insane activities
I don't
did
do,
you engage in?
I don't do ice fishing. It's you're sitting in one spot for too long, you know. Like I like to.
Unless of course you unless of course you drop to the bottom of a lake.
Well, then you're just going one direction, the wrong one. Everything's melted back home, as you know. Although the weather here is very similar to what it's been like for the last like month in April up in Saratoga. Feels like we had that nice warm stretch there probably around the time we spoke last, and then just every day in the 50s or whatever. And I've been down here for a few days now. My weather at home, just I was like, geez, it's been raining for like 5 days in a row.
It's lousy. Here, you know, we were excited that the 70 degree temperatures were supposed to arrive for Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There's a little bit, we'll keep an eye. There's a little bit of wet, but you never know here. You cannot worry about it until literally Thursday at noon. You can begin to take forecasts seriously, but not until then.
Yeah, and I feel like I don't know if they hype it up, you know, it feels like something.
It's just the reality here. It's a life. Volatile.
Yeah.
I lived in Cincinnati. It's a volatile trough when it comes to weather.
It's the Ohio River, right?
River Valley.
Because it gives you the allergies too, right? I never had allergies my whole life until I moved to this area many years ago.
Kentucky crud, as they call it.
Yeah, and then I just was like, okay, I guess I have allergies now. And they used to come back every year when I would come back for the Derby time. And now they don't again. So maybe I'm not here long enough or what. But
it's funny you say that because depending on what circuit you followed getting here, mm-hmm. the arrival of spring in various in various places, makes it interesting.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
And I knock on wood, I haven't had to deal with that as much.
Well, I'm
as
a dedicated, Interstate 90 across to Buffalo.
There we go.
Down to Erie. And then this year, Cleveland, stopped over in Cleveland and went to the Knicks-Cavs game Wednesday night. Yeah.
Holy cow.
It was awesome.
Wow.
I was planning on coming a little bit earlier to Kentucky, maybe to catch a little bit of Keeneland, and then I just decided to maybe try to go to that game when it was looking like it was coming about. And people are like, oh, are you a big NBA fan? And I'd never been to an NBA game in my life until this year. And I went to 3, thankfully. But, it was fun the other night. In Cleveland, the Knicks closed them out. And then I made my way down to Kentucky after that and caught the last couple days of Keeneland. Just barely at the very end. I was there for Marty McGee's farewell that they had for him in the Keeneland Press Box on closing day.
Very nice.
Friday, which was fun. And I was glad to be there for it. Of course, Marty's on the National Turf Riders and Broadcasters Board, and his term is expiring today. And we're going to hopefully fill that spot with someone capable.
He timed it perfectly.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah,
Derby. He tied it up with a bow.
Turf Riders, done. He's just checking all the boxes. I'm done with everything. So
that's great.
And moving on to, a new career as an agent for Talamo. So and today's a big day for us. It's the twice a year Kentucky Derby. Well, once a year Kentucky Derby National Turf Riders and Broadcasters meeting. Here in a few minutes, right here in the media center. So we always time it up so you can't be at the meeting, it seems like. So it's 11 a.m., so you'll still be on the air, just in case you had any complaints or questions.
No complaints. I have no questions. I still want us to pursue that one concept that I've discussed with you
archive
many times.
Of information. A treasure trove of stuff out there.
Exactly.
Right?
A historic preservation committee of some kind. To assure that racetrack archives and materials there's people say that stuff has been lost. God knows what was lost at Arlington, but they say at Rockingham. They say going back to the rebuild of Gulfstream.
Mm.
That it was sickening what was thrown, just literally stripped from the walls and just thrown out. Mm. So God knows what archival materials were in files that ended up. People said that there was artwork in dumpsters at Gulfstream.
Goodness gracious.
When the old grandstand was torn down. So that has to, I mean, this all started because of where I'll be in Baltimore,
mm-hmm, right.
in that photo treasure trove where, and that stuff is all being taken care of, and it's already been between Jim McHugh and there's also the chart books and the clip books,
mm-hmm,
that are in that other office that no one, that's not even really an office, it's a closet, a big closet, but there's unbelievable clip scrapbooks, giant scrapbooks that from the Baltimore American and the Sun and all these other historic papers that are long gone, and it's there's dozens of them, and it's and not just Preakness, but obviously Preakness is a huge part of it.
Yeah, Joe Clancy went in there, and after we talked to you about it, he went in there and found an article or a couple articles about a horse that their dad trained that won the Federico Tessio, which was great for him. He was like in there for, I was like, well, what are we doing? And he was like, I'm looking for stuff. And he was just in there diving in.
You know, they talk about the internet being a black hole. Deep dive and all the other silly monikers. Forget it. I sit there all day long. Day after day, it captivates me, and I put the pictures up. People love it.
People go crazy. It's coming soon, right?
A week from Monday.
That'll be awesome. We're ready.
It's crazy.
Maryland. We're not out of here yet, but yeah.
Well, let's get into some thoughts. And since we spoke last, I'd ask you the same kind of question that I asked Simon Bray. Any wholesale changes? What's your determination? How are you approaching the Japanese runners? Your Derby treatise.
Well, I guess we could start there. Start with the Japanese runners. I guess you got to respect them based on what they've done internationally, but and at the Breeders' Cup, I guess, a few years ago. But for me, I need to see it first. Here in the U.S. in a major grade one dirt race in the spring this time of year. The Breeders' Cup is one thing. Sometimes you end up in a scenario in a Breeders' Cup race where it's the end of the season. You might not have all the horses maybe at their best kind of at the end of the year. They're a little bit beat up, and not in a negative way, but just kind of long campaigns, and the Breeders' Cup's the last chance saloon for them. So I need to see that first. So maybe that's what I'm doing. So I guess you could, if the Japanese horses have a big day on Saturday, I'm not going to have a big day because I'm going to, their toss is to me after, last year and sort of the horse that got all the hype last year. And basically, his sole purpose ended up being just sort of setting it up for the race to completely fall apart by just gunning it at the start.
It's very true.
It's a much different environment here than the Saudi Cup or the UAE Derby. I've never been to either one of those, but it seems like a much different situation here. And those races are fine over there, and a lot of times I think the horses that win them are rightful winners and proper winners, but half the time they run against grass horses and horses that are maybe being squeezed into a spot that maybe they're not totally comfortable in. I almost feel the same way about the Dubai World Cup sometimes. If we don't have a real strong American contingent going over there, I feel like the race is maybe not as great as everyone seems to think it is. Despite the fact that it's a great purse, and usually the winner is a proper winner, but so that's a throw out for me. I've been listening and sort of reading stuff for the last several weeks, and people are like down on Forte, and I know he's the favorite, and everybody's kind of thinks that's a negative to pick a favorite. But the things that horse has been able to do in his career to me is impressive, and he's drawn well and trained properly. Two starts coming in, and he's overcome a lot already at Gulfstream to do what he did to win the Florida Derby and to win his comeback. So he's kind of my pick. I think, Pletcher is IRAD doing everything right these days. I mean, he's the one to beat, obviously. He's the morning line favorite, and like I said, he drew well. And
The IRAD quotient, though, coming out of the Keeneland, where all of a sudden could do nothing right, actually, and was you talk about black holes. Mm. They was throwing good money after bad.
Yes.
It was crazy.
Stay there for the whole meet, right? And it just didn't kind of work. But, you know, I have confidence in him. I mean, he'll hopefully get it done in here. I don't know. I hope I catch a little bit of a price, but I don't know. You know, this is always a tricky race for me because I'll just totally just discount certain horses like I just did in the Japanese horses. And then I end up just kind of like picking guys that I just like or really respect, you know, somebody like John Sheriff's, you know, bringing Skinner in here and really trying to get in the race. It's not a thing that, you know, a guy like him is not, you know, squeezing a round peg into a square hole. You know, he's showing up for a reason and he's always a force. You know, I know that those folks wanted to run, but, you know, him being a curling and just gonna love the distance, I think, and his you know, his races this year have been good. You know, not necessarily crazy about just breaking his maiden in February and then going on to win the Derby, but a lot of the old traditional rules about this race that used to exist are kind of gone now. You know, even in the last 10 years we've had a rapid change in how this race is run, but and the outcome of it. So he's a horse that I like, you know. And beyond him, I'm trying to, you know, I'm really searching for someone else that I really like. You know, there's just several that I always just sort of discount completely. I'm just, if you're not coming in good form or coming off wins and things like that, I'm not a huge fan of the 20 horse field. I'd rather see a 14 horse field that has, you know, a better field than just a bunch of, you know, horses. I mean, why American racing is so strange? Like, why all of a sudden do we have one race that's in demand and we have five horse fields like every other day? In grade ones, even.
Well, the one thing, that's interesting. I'm shocked, actually, to have you throw that.
I'll come with some takes now.
That lob up. The argument could be made that in terms of mainstream interest and, you know, monolith events for the game, that the Derby and the Triple Crown season is what works best and what is the most successful presentation that we have industry-wide. And yeah, Breeders' Cup, I think the hope was that it would turn into a spectacle that mainstream sports fans would take an interest in.
Yeah.
It really hasn't. I mean, people that have any more than a passing interest in the game, they'll take the Breeders' Cup in and are interested in the results and what the agglomeration of talent means.
Yeah.
This is different. I mean, this is the single event that, mm-hmm. that people that don't watch racing any other time of the year watch.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, we've actually trimmed this to 20 from 23.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Back in
Ask Little Current how he feels about 23.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not. I don't mean to denigrate it at all. You know, it's a great event, and I love it. You know, this. I've missed three since '98. You know, so I keep coming back, because it's great. You know, but it is truly a spectacle, like you said, and people ask about it all the time. And you know, there was a time this year when I actually thought I might not come to the Derby for a variety of reasons. I had a couple things going on, this, that, and the other thing. And I thought, they're gonna be doing all that construction this year. It's the 149th. Next year's a big deal, 150. I'll definitely be there for that. Maybe I'll be at Keeneland for part of that meet. XYZ, yada yada. And I would mention that to people just in casually, and they're like, "We're not going to the Derby," you know, like knowing what they know what I do. And what you do, it's like you're here, right? I mean, how do you miss it? And then once I'm here, I'm always like, you know, I'm glad I didn't miss it, because I always say, people always say, oh, derby party's fun. You know, it's fun. I went to this derby party. And I said, yeah, I went to a derby party once. It was fun until I had to be at the derby party, you know? There's only one party to be at on the first Saturday of May, and that's here, you know?
Yeah.
Central Ave, you got to be here. You know, just driving in today on the little bus that you take this shuttle bus in, I'm just like, yeah, it's back.
Back,
you know?
Back at the Downs.
Feels good. It's giving me chills just even saying it, you know?
So that's
how cool it is. I mean, I love it. 98, I came. I was a young sports writer from Saratoga, and they sent me down here. And, you know, sitting up in that old press box and watching the race, I just thought, this is unbelievable, you know? And just had to be here almost every year since. I missed a couple, but for various reasons, you know? But I think this is 23 or 24 or something like that for me, so... I'm not quite up there in the 50 level like our man Marty, but I'm getting there. So,
Well, obviously, each one is different and has its own themes and its own wrinkles and storylines. Yeah. But as the great John Asher would say, there's no bad derbies.
Some are just better than others.
All right, so the four. I mean, you have to give me at least three. Mm-hmm. Bing, bang, bong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Top pick.
Top Forte.
All right.
Skinner, 2.
Yep.
Hit Show, 3.
You look good today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, today?
Yeah, he did.
And Tappet Trice, 4. Those are my four.
All right. There you go.
Yeah. Hit Show. How about him? Hit Show. Favorite in the Wood Memorial. Now he's just like completely discounted. The one, I mean, isn't great.
Right. No, listen, he got beat a zap from an impossible.
By a horse that was 7,000
post.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Manny Franco. How about Manny? Let's go.
How about you got an Oaks horse?
Well, I'm a Wonder Wheel guy, but I mean, she certainly did not deliver.
The wheels kind of come off a little bit, but
we've had fun with Ray Handel over the years up at Saratoga. I'm kind of pulling for him a little bit.
Promise Her America,
you know, and South Lawn I think is going to be tough too. Along with the favorite, obviously, Wet Paint's going to be pretty tough. But I got to dig into this one pretty good.
All right, so I'm not. You get back to me with an Oaks pick.
Yeah.
You've got to go host the party, and
I got to run it. I'm not just.
I give you my proxy.
All right. Okay. Good.
All right.
Maybe I'll nominate you for a board position. What do you think about that?
On
the spot.
If drafted, I will serve.
I think you should do. I think you should be one. In all honesty.
It's up to you. I was the long time.
I'm going to nominate you.
I was the long time secretary at the Deke House.
Nice.
Mew of Deke at Colgate.
Red Raiders.
There we go. Now we're talking.
All right, bro.
Yeah. Tom, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Tom Law, everybody. And this is horseracing.com. And you'll have all the picks, Chapazian and everybody? All right. Friday and Saturday picks at thisishorseracing.com. I know Sid Fernando's listening. It's Sire Watch Pedigree Focus nodding along with Hit Show when it comes to Gary and Mary West. And I did sit at the Hit Show table. I sent Sid the photo of the little placard. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, bro. How are you?
I'm good. We're now past halfway on the coverage front. Thursday, Friday, of course. And I should remind everybody, Saturday, Sirius Channel 85. We're doing the NBC Derby pre-show, 2 to 5, before NBC takes over and brings you Derby coverage, 5 to 7:30 here on Sirius XM. So, slip that promo in. Sid, this, as you said last week, when it came time for your reveal, I think you've been revealing your preferences all winter long.
I have. I was just, I've been listening to some of your guests too. I have been reviewing them, and like you said, you got to take my, certainly two of my horses, Serious Bias, but number one, I like Angel of Empire. Number two, Hit Show. Number three, Skinner, and number four, Tappet Trice.
All right.
And that's who I'm going with. Angel of Empire and Hit Show, since, we've worked over at consultants, has played a small part in both of those horses are owned by clients of ours. That's the bias. But having said that, both horses were chosen. Well, Hit Show was a planned mating. Gary and Mary West, you know, their whole program is classic horses. You know, that's why, for example, they sold Life is Good. They felt at the price they wanted, which is $5.25, they felt at the time that that particular Into Mischief wouldn't get a mile and a quarter. Hit Show is bred for 10 furlongs. He's going to stay this trip. He's got a bad post, obviously. But, you know, he's a horse that runs on at the end, as we've seen in all his races. Angel of Empire, Albaugh Family Trust, he was purchased for $70,000 out of Book Five. You know, they're not usually Book Five people, but kudos to them. Jason Louch, again, they have the classics at the forefront, and they've got two, obviously, Jace's Road and Angel of Empire, plus waiting on the fringe there is Cyclone Mischief, but their whole thing is also for the classics. And in the case of Angel of Empire, he was a colt that we really liked for the distance, as well as everything else. And you know, he went out in the Book Five and got him for $70,000, and right now he's got a good shot with him. And I think he's a horse that has shown with each race that he loves the distance. And I think a mile and a quarter is right, you know, where he belongs. Tappet Trice, I actually saw him at the Tampa Bay Derby. He's just got a great walk on him. He's a beautiful horse. But Tappet, obviously, I paid a lot of money for him. Mandy Pope did, from the Gainsway bred and consigned horse, and she allowed Gainsway to come in for a leg. She owns the three legs. And he's a colt that continues to improve with every race. More than that, he's shown that he puts himself at, he's now, you know, Todd Fletcher's done a great job with him. He puts himself into his races a little more now, rather than having everything to do at the end like he did at the Tampa Bay Derby. Came back in the Bluegrass, he was much more lively and active beforehand, and put himself in quicker. And I think that's a real nice progression for him. He's by Tappet. He's going to stay the trip. And finally, Skinner. I mean, you've got, you know, John Sheriffs, who should be in the Hall of Fame. Just a master trainer, knows how to get a horse to peak. This horse was picked out by David and Gordo for CRK Stable from a two-year-old sale. And he's by Curlin. And, you know, Curlin every year gets classic horses on the classic trail. And this horse looks like he wants a mile and a quarter. It looks like he's peaking at the right time. And he's got John has put this horse in the deep end quicker than he normally would, I think, right from the beginning. And I think his last race is really, you know, excellent. I think he turns the table on Practical Move in this race. And everybody obviously needs a good trip. That goes without saying. But I think those four horses are all horses that run late in a race. They don't quit. They keep coming. And in the Derby, Steve, as you know, I mean, you need these horses to start running from the last eighth of a mile. And, you know, hopefully some of these horses break through, and hopefully one of these four wins.
It's a good group, and certainly, you know, certainly from a value standpoint, Hitcho and Skinner are going to be square numbers. Sid, I want you to. Don't know how much yesterday. Were you able to hear Nicole Russo yesterday?
No, I missed the yesterday show. What did she talk about?
Well, what we did was we kind of walked through the acquisitions. And how, you know, where these horses came from a purchase standpoint and from the homebred standpoint. It's a very interesting, you know, agglomeration of talent and it really runs the spectrum of approaches to the game. I mean, whether it's the homebreds or the sort of quasi homebreds. You know, yesterday we sat and had a wonderful conversation with Phil Sagan, or not Phil, but his son Anthony Sagan, who's pretty much responsible for the breeding of two Phils, and of course Patricia's Hope has. You know, Vince Foglia have bought a controlling interest, and there's actually now also an added partner that's come aboard. But that's a partial homebred. Gainsway bred Tappet Trice, but came back in with Mandy Pope. So that there's some of that going on. But there's 2-year-old in training purchases. There were weanling
Skinner is a 2-year-old in training.
The weanling purchase. Then there's straightforward, Keeneland type yearlings from all various. You mentioned the books. How about two Phils being an RNA in book one?
Yeah.
A hard That's spun true. Out of a general quarters mare. I mean, it's.
We got a couple of these horses where buyers had the opportunity and didn't bite. And the other one is Confidence Game for $25,000.
Absolutely.
And with that type of pedigree.
Yeah, and $70,000, as you brought up. I mean, for all bought, you know, considering the budget range, to get a horse that was at the bottom end of the spectrum. Says a lot.
Yeah, in fact, there's a video I saw yesterday. I think our Twitter account, Sirewatch, retweeted it, where Dennis Albon, his son-in-law, Jason Louch, are actually talking about, they don't buy that many horses every year, 10, 12. For them to get, for them to have three horses entered in the Derby is huge. I mean, think about it. There's 19,000 foals every year. They buy 10 horses, 12 yearlings every year, and to get three is just massive. And Jason actually pointed out something. Apparently, he and Dennis, obviously, they set a budget every year for what they're going to spend. And Jason said, after they'd done their buying, Jason turned around to Dennis apparently and said, "Hey, Dennis, do you mind if I buy one more colt just to add to our group from a later book?" And that's how they decided to go into book five, where we listed this colt and bought him for 70. And it was fortuitous because out of their three, that's the one they actually own by themselves.
That's amazing. I want to also, as part of this too, and as part of what we did yesterday with Nicole, and she's just fabulous. I do want to hit the stallion storyline, and of course, given our association with Hill and Dale, I've been absolutely flogging the fact that six horses in the field of 20 come from Hill and Dale stallions in Violence and Curlin and Good Magic, Into Mischief also with a pair of runners, and Candy Ride with a pair of runners. And Sid, I don't think I've seen it discussed too widely that Tappet, in addition to having a runner in here in Tappet Trice, he is the broodmare sire of four Derby runners, Hitcho, Kings Barnes, Disarm, and Rocket Can.
Pretty amazing.
Right?
Yeah, that's really pretty amazing. He's just a fabulous stallion. And, Frank Mitchell did a really interesting piece the other day, kind of from the physical standpoint of what Tappet provides. And Tappet provide, you know, Tappet is a medium 15-3, maybe it's on the smaller side horse, but he smooths out a lot of pedigrees and physicalities. And I thought it was a really interesting piece. If anybody's interested, they should kind of look up Frank's thing. But, you know, stallions that can do that on both ends. Here he is as a sire and as a broodmare sire at such a high level. You know, another one who's starting to do that at an even younger age is Uncle Mo. You've got, you know, Blame, who's a good sire and unique. You kind of knew he was going to be a great broodmare sire. He's a broodmare sire, obviously, of Fort. Is it Fort or Forte?
Well, it's very funny that you bring that up right today, because we've had a parade of visits that have utilized the Fort, which is the proper pronunciation. But as Larry Colmus mentioned the other day, the connections, Rapoli and team and Viola want it pronounced Forte, but the proper pronunciation is Fort.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because I actually just heard that for the first time on your show today with some of your guests.
Well, Simon, like, yeah.
Wait
Simon.
A minute, I must be a fool here.
No.
I must be the only guy calling Forte.
No, not at all.
But, you know, he's a great, this colt is a super colt, obviously. You know, he's taken a lot of hits because it appears that he hasn't progressed. But, you know, he's alive. Obviously, he's a live horse. He's, as you mentioned, from the Hill and Dale barn, to have two by Violence, Fort and Raise Cane, two by their young sire, First Crop, Good Magic with Mage and Reincarnate, and then two by Curling with Lord Miles and Skinner. And you also mentioned two by Candy Ride, and it's interesting because it was John Sakura who started Candy Ride off on his stud career as well. I mean, John Sakura is and Hillendale, their thumbprints are all over this Derby from their stallion barn.
I should mention too, because it's interesting in terms of the crosses and the nicking. Sid, we've talked extensively about the situation where the Winchell team is just positioned for God knows how much success long term with the Gunrunner. Gunrunner over the other four stallions, the other three stallions that covered Tappet mares, Candy Ride. Got Hit Show, Uncle Mo got King's Barnes, and Into Mischief got Rocket Can. So four distinct stallions and prominent stallions with the Tappet mares.
And I should actually mention something since you brought up King's Barnes. Lee Shearing, CRK Stable, obviously is represented by Skinner, right?
Yep.
Which was a David and Gordo pick, but he's also the breeder of King's Barn, and David does the matings for him for his breeding program. Now the King's Barn the breeder is listed under a different name. What's that name?
Skinner. King's Barnes is under that Parks Investment Group that we talked
about. Parks Investment.
That's how they sign.
Shearing.
Well, that's how he signs for his bloodstock acquisitions, too.
Right, yeah. And so that's bred by him, and he's also got a horse in the race that he purchases as a 2-year-old. So that's another little connection there, too.
There's a theme here that is intriguing among, you know, some of the purchases, obviously, you know, in the high six figures. But when you look at a horse like confidence game slipping through the cracks for $25,000. Here's Jane Lyon again. And every single season, you look up, and obviously she's got a set of boutique mares, but still, I mean, Bluisson being Zenyatta's sister, etc. But there's actually a real lesson in here, which is, you know, look at the kind of elite stake horses that come to the fore and, you know, get familiar with the breeding. And, you know, when you're looking at acquisitions, and you're looking through catalogs, you know, sometimes you got to figure it out. It's not, you know, the consignor isn't necessarily always, you know, you don't make that connection immediately, but you certainly can do the work. And, you know, the breeders whose names you see every Saturday, you lean on them. You know, Hertrick and Fielding.
Yeah.
I mean, you got people that are, and to pull one of Sid's references, you're looking for au courant producers, you know, breeders that are perennial successes, and also, you know, some breeders that come to the fore, essentially. You know, Clear Sky in the last several years, right? And
Stone Street. I mean, you know, that breeding program is just off the charts. You mentioned, you know, the Winchells buying and breeding. Hey, throwing Gary and Mary West. I mean,
yep.
How many owners have had three Eclipse Award winners in colts in 4 years with Game Winner, Maximum Security, and West Coast? And still bred a horse like Life Is Good who wasn't an Eclipse Award winner. And, I mean, that's an incredible achievement right there, you know.
Absolutely. Here's Jace's Road, who may be more of a bit player in this cast. He may end up actually serving a very valuable role should Angel of Empire succeed. I mean, Jace's Road, obviously, I don't think West Point wants him used, quote unquote, as a rabbit for Empire. But you know, he is a one-dimensional type of a horse. It seems he's Rich Santulli, Colt's Neck. You see the horses that he sells on a regular basis. G. Watts Humphrey. When Watts Humphrey sells his colts, he keeps the fillies. He sells the colts. This isn't rocket science to some degree.
It's funny. I'm glad you brought this up because even in our work, when we're going through sales and making our recommendations, Steve, you know, one of the things we look at, who bred the horse.
Yeah.
Because we give a lot of leeway to guys that know what they're doing.
Yep. Exactly. And you know, there's also, I think it's getting some press. I think Dave Grenig may have written about Sal Kumin and Chad Brown, of course, who bred Practical Move with Ack Naughty, who, of course, Chad trained for Sal, and the Head of Plains group that Sal heads up, and Practical Joke, obviously Chad using, you know, one of his Practical Joke seasons. And here he is getting a horse to the Derby that way.
And by the way, I'm glad you brought up Practical Joke because it needs to be said. This needs to be said. He came up the same year as Gunrunner, and Gunrunner obviously had that phenomenal first season with his two-year-olds, but Practical Joke had six black type winners from his first crop. Now, one of the things that you should pay attention to if you're really keen on this game and you're in the bloodstock business is tracking how a stallion's second crop of two-year-olds do. Well, guess what? The next year with their two-year-olds, there's always a drop. Gunrunner dropped way down from number one to like number 21. Practical Joke stayed in the top 10. He was like number three the first year and number six. That's a tremendous sign that a stallion is doing something. So now when you look at their second crop of three-year-olds, you know, Gunrunner had his first stakes winner in his second crop just recently. Practical Joke has had several stakes winners, including Practical Move, who's, you know, in the Derby. And he stands for $25,000. And I'd written a column about him at the end of December 2022. I said, this horse is incredible value when you base it on this statistic. And it's proven to be true right now. People that did breed to him this year or are breeding to him this year are getting some great value for the buck, because this horse is producing some very good horses at a modest stud fee.
Well, and that's that's a formula. There's a lot of ways to get here. Now, of course, only one is going to come out of here, you know, with probably the most coveted little gold trophy in sports. But you could just tell even yesterday the conversation with Anthony Sagan, and you know the thrill to get here after one broodmare.
Yeah, that's just phenomenal, Steve.
So it's heartening. I always, I love featuring that kind of a story, because for those of us that do not have an unlimited resources at our disposal, it in so many ways it proves that you can get. It doesn't have to be Derby, but the fact that we are here and those people are there, the second time that the Don't Tell My Wife Stables group with Keith DeSormo, you talked about that after the Rebel win. They've now gotten to the Derby twice with modest buys. It's amazing, and it gives us all some hope.
It sure does. It's the premier race, and everybody's talking about it, including obviously people outside the normal racing circles. So it's a really a great celebratory time, and it's a great week, and it's really interesting to hear everybody's takes on it too, because you hear so many new voices coming out with who they like, and sometimes you get something out of it.
Yeah, you hope so. We always hope so. Before Sid, before we wrap, you got a filly that you prefer in the Oaks?
Steve, I don't. Again, my bias. I was really hoping for Punch Bowl, who just got beaten in the Ashland. Gary and Mary West, and I'm just going to watch as a fan of that race. It's a wide open race, and I've been listening to everybody's pick on your show this morning, which seems that way, right? It's pretty wide open.
Seems like it.
Yeah. By the way, I really enjoyed some of the insights from Simon Bray, especially his part about Bob Baffert and when he first went out to California to see that training and saw how Bob was training those horses. The other thing I wanted to add to that is Bob also gets the most expensive stock to train like that too.
He does now, so, but not back yeah. then he didn't though, Sid.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
And you've written about that in your, your piece about.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. He's always had the best runner of a particular sire.
Exactly. That was a fascinating piece when you did that a year ago or more. I will mention, yeah. It just occurs to me, because I'm just looking at the lineup quickly before we wrap. Seth Marrow is going to join us next. We'll get Seth's opinions, and Papo Morales will join us from Form to Win and M Wager, and we'll get his take. But what's interesting, Sid, given our weekly deep dives into the pedigrees and breeding trends and so forth, the lineup of stallions in this Oaks is as if you took an Etch-a-Sketch and shook it. City of Light, Connect, Dialed In, Pioneer of the Nile, Nyquist, Cross Traffic, Arrogate, American Pharaoh, Blame, Medaglia d'Oro, Gervin, another Arrogate, and two Into Mischiefs. So there's only one sire that's represented in both races, Into Mischief. Otherwise, it's an entirely new cast of stallions.
Interesting. And that one sire is the sire that, you know, is at the top of the game and constantly gets, I mean, every Saturday, it seems like there's a stakes winner by him. That's Into Mischief.
That
phenomenal stallion.
This,
you know?
This just, I mean, if Julia Shining had gotten in, Curlin would have horses in both races. But two Into Mischiefs, he's the only crossover, and there's two Arrogates. So the other 10 runners from 10 different sires, none of which have a horse in the Derby. There's a column.
Really,
there's something for you to write, Sid. Right there. That's why.
Yeah.
Why the mile and a 16th and the mile and the 8th runners versus the mile and an 8th to a mile and a quarter runners? There's got to be some meat.
That's really interesting. You really hit upon something right there.
All right, I'm leaving it to you. I only come up. I'm an idea man.
Yeah, but I'm not writing columns anymore.
No, I know you're not. I know. But you could write a white paper. Have Pat Cummings publish it.
The king of the white papers. That is the funniest thing I've heard. I mean, that humor is just freaking classic, bro. I mean, the king of, you just bring Pat Cummings right into it. Oh, man, that's funny.
I love it. Sid, yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Listen, have a great time. And I'll talk to you after the Derby.
We will talk Wednesday, and we will have the big recap conversation. And don't know how the Japanese enter into this. We may be talking about the Japanese program again, but no matter what, fascinating 2 minutes plus, and it all boils down to that on Saturday evening. Sid Fernando, everybody, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and of course, Work Thoroughbred Consultants. There's still some breeding going on, and Sid and Roger and the team can help you with any of these late season decisions that are still out there. Thanks, Sid.
All right, I'll see you, Steve.
Sid Fernando, folks, staying right here. Let me turn right around, get to our man, get to Seth. We're not missing this opportunity, because he'll get busy as well with plenty of coverage on Capital OTB the next, today, too. It's Wednesday, and, of course, at Belmont Park tomorrow, things kick off, and I'm sure Seth has gotten into the Thursday and Friday cards. The Westchester, for those that haven't looked ahead to Friday, and I'm sure when Dave Grenick joins us, even though Dave's been busy here, we'll get his Westchester thoughts as Belmont opens. And of course, the news that we touched on with Pat McKenna the other morning, and then was confirmed yesterday, late Monday, of course, in Albany. Seth, things are set. There'll be a new Belmont Park at some point soon in the next several years.
Yeah, I went down and shot some video for the weekend show back when they had the rally down in Albany 6 weeks ago, maybe something like that. Yeah. Good turnout there from all facets of the industry, and there was a lot of enthusiasm. But it's New York State and the budget. You just don't know how that's going to go. And so people who had their fingers crossed, and then it looked like, oh, it's in. But again, being New York State, the budget's 30 days late. So, and you don't know what's going to change in the meantime. But then when things finalized a couple days ago, it looks good for Belmont. So, yeah, it'll be fun to kind of follow that along and see, you know, a new era in New York racing.
Well, the Derby, in the meantime, obviously towers over everything, Seth. And as usual, you'll arrive Saturday with a bunch of horses covered. You and Rich Ang with some and John White, plenty of future wagers. I will get, by the way, I still got to print out two or three of the future wager pool results, so I've got them at my fingertips. Where are you? What are you doing on Saturday with the rest of that field?
Well, yeah, I was just looking again today that, you know, with horses that scratched in and whatnot. So I'm going to be live to about 11 of them in here with various field, you know, all others in a couple of the pools. And then in some of the pools, I used a little hit show single, a little verifying single, and also Angel of Empire. I have that one in one of the future pools. I have some Sun Thunder also. But yeah, so I have a slew, you know, not big wagers, but enough that now I can, you know, use it to strategize maybe a little bit on Saturday. So yeah, looking forward to it. I should tell people that tonight, if there is some interest, Capital OTB Kentucky Derby Seminar, folks can check it out on the Capital OTB. Well, you can watch it on our network if you're in here in upstate New York, but it'll be on the Capital OTB YouTube channel tonight at 7. We'll be taking a comprehensive look at the Derby if people want to check that out.
Excellent. Well, give us your approach.
I think the 2 days to me are just a lot of fun, and I think the undercard stakes races, particularly on Saturday, are just they're wide open too. So I think pick bets have all kinds of opportunities. But I eventually, you know, as I say, I played a little Angel of Empire in the future pool. I liked Angel of Empire in the Risen Star. I liked Angel of Empire in the Arkansas Derby. I landed there. I'm 14, 15, 11, and 10. And then I couldn't leave Tappet Trace out. I'll have him in my mix as well. But Angel of Empire on top, I thought that was a really nice performance in the Arkansas Derby. On the numbers, on the buyers, I don't know. Might have to step it up a little bit. We'll see. But, you know, I don't think we're talking about a lot. We're talking about a lightly raced horse who's coming in the right fashion. And I landed there, but Forte right underneath coming out of the big performance in the Florida Derby. And I told you a few weeks ago, I'm interested to see what the betting public does, because I've been down in the fourth spot. I use Practical Move, 10 to 1 on the morning line, but with the two triple digit buyers, I'm really intrigued to see where the betting public goes and how Practical Move shakes out. And I was looking back this morning at the last 10 winners, not counting the pandemic year 2020, where obviously the schedule was askew. But the last 10, there were three horses that won the Kentucky Derby that came out of the Florida Derby. And there were three horses that came out of the Santa Anita Derby. And I think the Derby itself, the Kentucky Derby itself, is an interesting racing animal because it's right there on the same spot every year. There's the same lineup of prep races. And so I think you can look at historical trends and kind of hang your hat on that a little bit. That said, as I say, there were three Florida Derby, there were three Santa Anita Derby, but there are also a couple that came out of the Arkansas Derby. So that gave me a little impetus for Angel of Empire. And then in the mix as well, I used Disarm. I have to believe they were just kind of shooting for the points in the Lexington. They got just enough points. And I found it very intriguing that Steve Asmussen, after getting the win and you're in with the Preakness down at the stake at Oaklawn a week and a half or so ago, said, you know, before we decide about this one going to the Preakness, let's see what our Derby horse can do. And, you know, same, obviously, Winchell, same owners and whatnot. So I found it interesting that he was going to take a wait and see. And to me, that showed some confidence and Disarm. And then I couldn't leave out Tappet Trice. I'll have him in the mix as well. It just comes in very good form. That was a nice win in the Bluegrass. So I'm using some logicals in here, but if Disarm hits the morning line, that's going to be some value. And as I say, I'm really interested to see what Practical Move goes off at. But I think I could point to probably another five or six and feel maybe similarly confident. I'm scared that I've left out Derma Sotogaki, the Japanese horse, who I think is very eligible to be in the mix here.
Well, interestingly, as and Papo Morales will round out our guests today, so far, you, Simon Bray, Sid, and Kevin Kirstein today, it might just be heavy coincidence that four of the six today have landed on Angel of Empire.
That is very interesting. I didn't see that coming. Now I'm interested to see what we get for Angel of Empire at post.
Post-time. I mean, as the third, Andy Beyer on that topic, actually, you were on the air, so you wouldn't have heard Andy at 9:15. But Andy brought up what I think is a real legit point. I hadn't thought about it until he said it. He thinks that by the time they open these gates, Fort is in the 5-1 range, that it's going to end up being, you know, one of those, you know, derbies where the favorite is 9-2, 5-1.
Yeah, I can see that. I can totally see that. And I have said many times, I have a tough time predicting odds in the Derby because it is so different with the 20 horses. You know, day in and day out, we're watching races that are 8, 10, maybe 12, and we get used to predicting. And so it definitely has a different feel. And yes, I think there are enough in here that this year's Derby favorite could go off in that range, which is great. It's great for Abbott. Again, that's part of what makes this such a fun day.
All right. So for those that were writing it down, I appreciate you giving the numbers, too. 14-15, 11-10-5 for Seth. Angel of Empire, Fort, Disarm, Practical Move, Tap It, Trice. That's a nice group. You got a filly on Friday?
I'm going to go with Orange Horse. I thought South Lawn looked pretty good coming out of the Fairground Oaks. And I think most people are going to tilt towards Wet Paint. I don't have any argument. But in between those two bookend for me, I thought Botanical could be interesting coming over from Turfway. And this is another one where I'll be interested to see how the odds shake out. But I'm going to go with South Lawn at 6-1 on the morning line, Norm Cassie, and Raylu. We'll see if Raylu can get a Oaks.
The Oaks, as I wrote the other day, the Oaks is, and both the full weekend, does have, Oaks and Derby, they do have a good way of elevating and putting a spotlight on, Raylu probably qualifies as a little on the young side for this, but it when you think about, on the Oaks side, I mean, Rosie Napravnik, her career, had she stayed on, obviously she would have, you know, been, I mean, she still is, I think, well regarded as one of the top riders of her generation until she became a mom and chose not to come back. But, Rosie Napravnik's win, Boo Boo Clark won himself in Oaks. I mean, you get... Martin Garcia, I mean, you get, I think Plum Pretty, I think he won with, you get Derbies and Oaks that, obviously Sonny Leone last year, and you think about Stewie Elliott, you go through that kind, Mario Gutierrez, and he was on the young side, so he could maybe fit, but the history of this weekend is very good with journeymen that, get a moment in the sun. So I got no problem with Raylu. And when it came to Derby, Jareth Loveberry, James Graham, those two in particular feel like, they would qualify under that scenario. Junior Alvarado, with a couple thousand wins, qualifies under that scenario too. So just a little aside on the riding front.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what makes the weekend so much fun. There are a lot of storylines. The horses, you were talking with Sid about the breeders and the breeding and whatnot, and some smaller operations, but on the jockey and trainer side, a lot of fun as well. And, it was interesting. I had Kevin Kirstein on with me on Saturday, and I pulled up. He had tweeted out a little video of Wayne Lucas on the horse out the other day and at Churchill Downs out on the horse, 87 years old. The coach, Wayne Lucas, still out ponying around on workout time. So, again, he's one of the nice stories as well.
Seth Merrow, what's the coverage? What's the Capital OTB lineup through the weekend?
I will be, I'll kick in this afternoon, and we'll have Churchill action, obviously, all through the weekend with NBC coverage. We can't show some of those races, but we'll certainly be talking about them plenty in the regular slots and whatnot. Derby seminar tonight at 7 o'clock. You can find it. Watch us on the network if you're here in upstate New York, or check it out on the Capital OTV YouTube channel. That's probably the easiest way to pick it up. Love to have people tune in. That's 7 o'clock tonight.
Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow, too, on Twitter, equidaily.com. Will you have full card selections and everything? All right.
I will. Yep. Absolutely.
Seth, good luck. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Same to you. Good luck, and everybody have some fun and make some money.
All right. You need me Sunday morning for recapping?
I would say yes. Boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground, baby. Is there a horse? Boots on the ground.
That is your next DT Stables homebred.
we do have one that doesn't have a name. We do have a colt that he's a gelding.
Oh, that was wild the other day when Bick won. That was fun. That was good.
Well, thank you for bringing it up. I haven't plugged Tim Kreiser and the Bush Racing people. They got him back in a claim, and he's now 3 wins, 3/3, and they can keep running him for that 62.5 number. He, as Jay Pribman says, and Jay will join us tomorrow at 10 a.m. He went to the front and improved his position. Quite good. Thanks, Zach.
Excellent. Yeah, take it easy.
Seth Merrow, everybody, and capital OTB. Let's get Papo in and round out the morning. This has been breakneck pace again today. I shouldn't be surprised. And, in fact, as I reach for Papo, tomorrow, I've already told you, Brad Free will kick off the coverage. Brad is going to provide the $3 three-year-old pick three, how he's going to bet it. I suggested somewhere between, $72 to $108 budget. I think that, just as a base. I mean, obviously some of you will spend, a lot more. And you're talking the American Turf, the Pat Day Mile, the American Turf, and the Derby. Those are the three-year-old races. We're going to get plenty of that kind of ticket structure work done tomorrow and Friday. Dick Powell is on his way here. We'll have Dick tomorrow. Jay Privman is mentioned. Scott Shapiro needs to join us tomorrow as well for his opinions. And, of course, we'll also have Nick and James Scully together to go through the Friday card. And I'm anxious for their insight as to what I suggested earlier today, that the Friday slate is a more, I won't say harrowing, but it just has more potential for some chaotic results, it seems. Seems like Saturday's, first of all, there's some smaller fields, which contributes, obviously, to less chaos. So I'm curious what the boys will have to say when we're joined by them. Andy Serling is also traveling. I think, Andy, I think tomorrow, Rich Eng, of course, and we will, I think I'm going to get a visit from Brian Sanfratello. Heard from Brian and, of course, the Pennsylvania Breeders. With all of this conversation about Angel of Empire, the Pennsylvania Breeders have got to be all excited. Forgotten Land Investment and Black Diamond Equine, covering the To Honor and Serve Bear, Armony's Angel. So big shot. Obviously, another Pennsylvania bred Derby winner. And in fact, who did I mention? I mentioned Plum Pretty. She was a Pennsylvania bred Oaks winner, right? So we'll have a little Pennsylvania. These are visit that Pennsylvania breeding team has supported us for a number of years. Papo Morales, speaking of supporters, and AmWager and Form to Win. And I just saw earlier this morning, Papo has been banging out the angle on Form to Win that we talked about 3-4 weeks ago. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How you doing this morning?
Excellent. Haven't talked in a couple of weeks as things kind of got, a little out of whack. But certainly looking forward to the Form to Win glances and snapshots for Derby and for Oaks, and not just Derby and Oaks, but with these field sizes and with a lot of races and particularly with the stake races where you've got, you got real form to deal with. There should be some very interesting prices that bubble to the surface.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to diving into those, Steve. As we get to the stakes races, the claiming and the allowance races have been pretty formful even with the prize horses that I've been using the analysis on. I was at the track Saturday night, had a good night, found some prices, and then yesterday we had two $20 horses that were not that hard to find, just using by average average equibase across all starts, and then you take the top horse off average form to win projected time, and it continues to be a great angle.
I love it, and you know, the work that you do, and you know, trying to format and find these kinds of nuggets, and it doesn't take much. A couple of adjustments to the settings, and it's right there. And not only is it right there, it's there in seconds.
Yeah, very quick, Steve. So you can do the card fairly quick now. If you really want to dive in, you know, you have the edit button. You have the option of going in and taking out performances. If you didn't like, you know, maybe the horse had a bad break or got stuck in traffic, you can take those particular past performances out, and then it recalculates the projected time. So especially for those stakes races, I've made notes on some horses that I'll be making some adjustments and then seeing how the algorithm projects them to run.
Well, and so we'll be able to start looking at Friday.
Tomorrow.
And then obviously Saturday I'm losing track of days. Today's Wednesday. And so then on Friday you'll have the Saturday card. And I mean, what do you anticipate? And you know, what kind of confirmation of horses that you're interested in for the weekend, Papa? What do you want to see at the top of the charts?
Yeah, so see, I'm very interested to see how these Derby horses play out on form to win. I'll only be looking at performances at a mile and an eighth and up, so that'll be my filter. So I've been on Angel Empire kind of the entire season. Just he's an improving horse. His last five starts, his speed figures have gone up. He's got two races at a mile and an eighth. I like the striding out in his last race. He looks to be on a good cycle for the sheet numbers. But the more and more, see, this week, I've dove deeper into the actual pen and paper PPs, I'm intrigued by Dermis Sagataki. He's the only horse in the race. He has four races at a mile and an eighth. Now, two of those were on turf. They switched him to dirt. He won those two. He's coming off that race in Dubai going a mile and a 3/16. I've gone back and watched the replays. He's got good gate speed, so he should be able to establish position. He's not a need-to-lead type of horse. He can relax. So I'm very intrigued with what price he will be. And the problem is my raw data from form to win is not going to have his Japanese or his Dubai form on it. So I'm just going to have to go off what I've seen and his base of work on the standard PPs. But I find him very intriguing. And if you actually watch the video of his last five furlong work, I think they got him in 101. It was more of a 7/8 or a mile work. He kept going all the way around the back stretch.
Yep.
I know he was, some people said, oh, he was pulling in his 4 furlong work, I guess yesterday. But if you listen to the trainer, he said the horse does that when he has to be, when he has to go shorter distances. And but once he gets out there and he can get a set of comfortable gait, getting in his speed, he relaxes. So I'm intrigued by him. I mean, he's got a good body of work. The dam side totally supports. I mean, you got Neo Universe is the dam sire, so I always look at that. I think it's 8.6 on the average winning distance on the dam side. So I'm intrigued. Now, whether he can trip out, I am interested in horses that are going to be on the front end or close to. I don't know how fast this Derby's going to be. So if it's not particularly fast, it's going to be hard for those horses coming from behind to make up ground turning for home. So I think he'll be well positioned. Just a matter of whether he's good enough or not. And at the right price, you know, I know he's 10-1 on the morning line. At the right price, I'd be willing to take a shot with him.
I thought that Andy Beyer, who did pick him, I thought that Andy made a fair point about 6-1 to 8-1. That it just seems like there's too much interest, and simultaneously, it feels like Angel of Empire has got some, you know, some mojo as well, and the concentration of those odds appear to be thickening. The top, let's say, five choices.
Yeah, and don't forget Mattress Max, Steve. He'll be putting that $1 million on the favorite. Now I have heard. he's going to mix it around this year.
Yeah.
It won't be a straight win bet.
Correct.
He's going to put it into a couple other pools.
That's correct.
So maybe that won't have as much as an effect on the win pool, but we'll just have to see.
Well, and in fact, I saw Mark Midland at the draw. Was it the draw? Wherever I saw Mark, and he was was at the fundraiser on Monday night at Molly Malone's, and Mark said that they're going to do two things. They're going to be, you know, spreading the money over, you know, a wider period, and they're going to also, you know, leverage him. Assuming Fort, I can't see anything preventing him from going favored, obviously. So they're going to utilize some other pools, as you said. Who knows? Maybe some Derby Oaks doubles, Oaks Derby double, whatever. And we'll see how it comes together. We may actually. I think Mac is going to join us on Saturday on the two to five broadcast. How are you handling? You mentioned the distance portion. How are you handling? Well, actually, it's a mile and an eighth for at least he had 1 mile and an eighth start confidence game.
Yeah. Well, Derma Sagataki's actually got four.
No, I'm confidence game. No, I take that back. The Rebel, that's right, a mile and a 16th. I just went to look. That's right. He has not gone a mile and an eighth. What do you do with him?
I X him out totally, Steve.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah, if they don't race at a mile and an eighth, I don't want to guess what they're going to do at a mile and a quarter. I also have been looking. I think it's funny that a lot of these trainers, I'm not a trainer, so they know better than me, but I'm just curious with a lot of 4 furlong works. I've made several notes on the guys that have been working the horses 6 furlongs.
Yep.
4 furlong works, just not sure it's going to get it done, but we'll see.
Got about a minute, and Papa Morales with us, of course, for him to win and Am Wager. And so Friday and Saturday, you'll be able Thursday and Friday to punch around on form to win and see, especially in these big fields and with real, with well campaigned stake horses, we should get some interesting reads. Your Philly decision?
No decision yet, Steve.
All right.
Not as confident in that one yet. I need to do more homework, and I need to run it through form to win, but I'll do the screenshots and have them posted.
So excellent. And I will.
Everybody can see.
All right. For whatever reason, there was a period where they weren't showing up on my timeline. Now they are again. Listen, this guy is ruined. I mean, he's ruined the platform. But it's. And I don't know what I didn't change anything. I don't know what exactly happened. But all of a sudden, after not seeing them for like 2-3 weeks, they started showing up again. So I'm glad. So I recirculate them whenever I see them. Papo, best of luck to you and everybody at Am Wager, and we'll talk next week. We'll do some recapping.
Yeah, sounds great, Steve. Have a great Oaks and Derby.
Thanks so much, Papo Morales, everybody. Form to win, Am Wager. There you go. There is the Wednesday get-together, and there is a ton to do. We've got, obviously, all the regulars and plenty of other opinion makers, pundits to join us over the next 6 hours, Thursday and Friday at the races here at Churchill Downs. And, of course, Marty McGee, Dave Grenick, Mike Welch, and Marcus Hirsch. Joe Christofek on Friday morning early before the Oaks Day action starts. We will get a Jeff Franklin visit in, and Jerry Brown's Thoroughgraph seminar is up and available at Thoroughgraph. He put it up late last night, and I highly suggest it. Well worth the price. But Jeff and I will talk a couple of races on, I think, hour three on Friday. Hammer and Jimmy Ventura and everybody else. Thanks to Andy Beyer, Kevin Kirstein, Simon Bray, Tom Lauderdale, Sid, of course, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, Seth Merrow, Papa Morales. Thanks, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 tomorrow. Talk to you at 9:00.